welcome to the Advisor Pact Monthly Session. I'm Mark Little. You know, the Advisor Pact Monthly Session is for advisors who are willing to make a commitment, a pact, to each and every one of their ideal clients that you're delivering truly comprehensive financial services. This Advisor Pact follows the following outline. So you should make a pact something like this. I promise to deliver truly comprehensive financial services and provide oversight over all your financial affairs under a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. The word PACT is an acronym. P is for protection. I pledge to protect your assets and your financial strategy. I've got your back and will work to identify every potential conflict of interest. A is for attention. I pledge to pay close attention to your financial situation and proactively recommend the course corrections required in order for you to remain on track to your objectives. C is coordination. I pledge to coordinate all the financial people and all the financial products in your life so that every financial recommendation is perfectly aligned with your comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. And then transparency. I pledge that you will fully understand at all times what every financial person and every financial product will cost you over the next 12 months. You will have no hidden financial fees in your life. Now, if you'll implement this pledge to each and every ideal client, you will be a financial services monopoly in your area. We've studied this since 2002. And affluent financial clients all over the world claim that these are the four things that they are unable to find anywhere at any price. And so by delivering these four things as a package, you will have a competitive advantage against every other financial advisor that your potential clients could work with. These are the four things that advisors are unwilling and unable to provide as a package. And so by making this advisor pact, you'll be the only game in town. So we received several questions this month, and I've hand-selected a few that I thought would be the most useful to you, all the members of the Advisor Pact program. And I had a conversation with a new member this week, and his question basically was, what's the business structure that's best for offering truly comprehensive financial services? Is it a broker-dealer model, registered investment advisor, or something else? So basically what this advisor was wondering is, as you're thinking about your business structure, your business entity, you know, is there an optimal way to set this up so that, so that it's the best way to organize your business around truly comprehensive financial services? Now, I made the point that we have advisors all over the English-speaking world who implement this program. So if you're in Australia or the UK, you know, broker-dealer would be like a dealer group. I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure in Canada there's no such thing as a registered investment advisor or actually anything quite close to that. That's a U.S. term. But let me just give you some high-level concepts around this issue so that you can get the general gist of how to set this up. First of all, I think there is a misconception on the part of many financial advisors about who actually is setting up this business model. I think financial advisors, if you're a wirehouse broker or an independent financial advisor or maybe a certified financial planner, there's kind of an implication in our industry that the trusted advisor, in other words, the individual setting up the business model, is a financial advisor. And that's not necessarily true. We've had any financial professional, and I say financial professional loosely, any financial professional can decide to step up and become the most trusted advisor. So if you're a registered rep with a broker-dealer or with a dealer group, or if you are in the U.S., you have a registered investment advisor, or you're an IAR, perhaps you're a CFP. But even like CPAs, tax accountants, estate planning lawyers, insurance agents, all these professionals have successfully set up truly comprehensive financial services. So the one thing you have to be aware of is that the point of entry for implementing this system is not necessarily just financial advisors. It could be accountants, lawyers, anybody that decides, any financial professional that decides to step up and say to the client, I'm holding myself out as your most trusted advisor, and I will make this advisor pact pledge to you. I'll protect you. I'll pay attention. I'll coordinate all your financial affairs, and I'll make sure everything's fully transparent so there's no hidden fees and you understand what you're paying for everything. So the point of entry is any of these financial professionals could step into that role. But to your question, I think the key thing that you have to realize is that most of the deliverables checkpoints, and I'm going to define that term for you here in a second, but most of the deliverables checkpoints that we deliver to clients for truly comprehensive financial services do not involve investment advice. So the key, it really depends on why you're asking the question. So if you're just asking just a nice, friendly, what kind of business entity should I set up, under the theory that you could set up pretty much any, you're flexible, you could set up any kind of financial, any kind of business entity that you want, because let's say you're independent, then that's one thing. But if you're thinking about this because, for example, you're with a dealer group or a broker dealer, and you're thinking, how do I set this up from a compliance standpoint? Because maybe in your situation, you have to please your compliance people. You know, that's a whole different issue. And that's what I'm saying here. And I'll go through this in a little bit more detail here in a second. But the key thing you need to realize, if you're thinking about this from a compliance standpoint, is your compliance entities typically are concerned about what? They're concerned about the regulations, the laws, as it relates to investment advice. And the point I'm making at is what we do in truly comprehensive financial services is so far above investment advice, and it involves so many other things that you have to kind of conceptually realize most of what we do don't involve investment advice. In other words, don't involve, really, technically, don't involve the compliance people. Now, I realize many of you are chuckling out there like I am because your compliance people have this funny tendency of wanting to decide for themselves what is their business. So it's not really, if you're working with a compliance consultant, it may be their perspective that, you know, hey, I'll decide what we're reviewing as far as compliance. But I'm just telling you that in theory, their main focus should be just investment advice. And most of what we do is not investment advice. Now, a deliverables checkpoint is just simply the checklist of items. And that's what, at the end of the day, that's what our system is. It's going to end up being a series of checklists that each and every one of your team members will cycle through on an annual basis to make sure that nothing falls through the cracks. So we call these checkpoints on each checklist for every one of your deliverables team members, deliverables checkpoints. And so when you kind of drill down and analyze each deliverables checkpoint at a very detailed level, most of them do not involve investment advice. Okay, so I always promise you, and one of the benefits of the Advisor Pack Monthly program is that we have a lot of these questions answered in our more advanced coaching program called the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, which is actually software, but it's a comprehensive program including consulting. And so I always, when I get a question like this, I always tend to go over to the toolkit, which you do not have access to, and look at how we describe this to the toolkit members. And so here's how we describe this particular issue on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, and it really answers, it goes right to the heart of your question. So there are four points that you need to make if you're looking at this, five points that you need to make if you're looking at this from a compliance standpoint. You're thinking, I've got to explain truly comprehensive financial services to my compliance person. And so these are the five points that you'll make. Now, these percentages may be slightly different for you. So one of the differences between the Advisor Pack Monthly Program and the Trusted Advisor Toolkit is that in the Advisor Pack Monthly Program, we just teach you the method to go out and create your own deliverables checkpoints for your clients. Now, on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, we do supply you with our deliverables checkpoints. And it might surprise you to learn that there are 142 deliverables checkpoints that represent what we call truly comprehensive financial services. So those checkpoints are proprietary. They're only available on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit. But not to worry, we teach you in the Advisor Pack Monthly Program how to sit down with your five subject matter experts. That's your money manager, your financial planner, your tax accountant, your estate planning lawyer, and your insurance consultant. Those are the five team members that you'll build. And we teach you in the Advisor Pack Monthly Program a very effective method of working with your subject matter experts to establish your unique deliverables checkpoints. So these percentages, 20% and 80%, really are more focused on our checkpoints on the toolkit, those 142 deliverables checkpoints. So just play along here. This is how we coach advisors on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit to have this conversation with their compliance people. Okay, so first of all, you need to make the point that 20% of what you coordinate, in other words, the deliverables checkpoints, but we're not using that term with the compliance people because they don't understand our vernacular, but it's to make the point to your compliance person that, look, 20% of what I do is investment advice or involves investment advice. And 80% of what I do does not involve investment advice. Okay, so they need to understand that right up front. Now, one of the things that compliance people often get very fussy about is the documents and the reports that actually are produced and presented to your clients. So in the Advisor Pack Monthly Program, just as we do in the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, we teach you some proprietary reports, basically a bunch of one-pagers where, not to get too deep into this, but basically what we've done over the years is we've surveyed clients, we've identified that clients in general dislike the statements that their financial institutions and their financial advisors put in front of them. The reports that they typically get from advisors don't hit the issues that are most important in the minds of clients. So what we've done is we have studied what affluent ideal clients need and want in their reporting. And we've created proprietary reports that you will create for your ideal clients. Or when I say you will create, we have they're created by your subject matter experts. So we won't define what these are, but you can see the money manager creates something called the circle chart. The financial planner creates the greatest probability strategy, the GPS, and the progress reports. The tax expert creates the tax projections. The estate planning subject matter expert creates something called the legacy flow, and the insurance subject matter expert creates something called the insurance grid. Okay, forget what these things are. All I'm saying is your compliance people get very nervous, or they definitely want to know a lot about these reports and who creates them and so forth. And the point that you need to make in our model is that you, as the most trusted advisor, the financial advisor, you don't create any of these reports. These reports are all created by outside business activities, in other words, subject matter experts that are not part of your investment advice model. Now, the money manager may be, so that may be an exception in my firm. And the way we teach it, the money manager is also an outside business activity because we go out and recruit a money manager outside of my firm to be the money manager and to create this report. But regardless, okay, so maybe in your case, there's one subject matter expert that is not a part of your outside business activity. The point I'm making it is it could be structured and is structured for most advisors using our system that none of these reports are created by you as the advisor. And that usually is a big relief to the compliance people who, you know, depending upon how strict they are, they may have lots of rules or, you know, prohibitions on how you create reports that get placed in front of clients. So for example, if a separately licensed certified public accountant, like a CPA, creates tax projections, usually compliance people don't have any problem with an outside CPA creating tax projections for a client, or an outside lawyer. An estate planning lawyer creates a document using our format, the legacy flow. So you've recruited somebody onto your team to be the estate planning subject matter expert. They're an outside lawyer, and they create and you instruct them to create this legacy flow using the format in the Advisor Pack monthly program. Anyway, the point I'm making at is you can and should explain to your compliance people that as much as possible, every report is created by an outside business activity. When you get to the module where we describe all these reports, there are samples of these reports that you can give to your compliance person, because oftentimes, even if you're not creating the report, they still want to see it and they might want a copy for the file. So, you know, in the module where you'll get into all these reports, all of that is provided for you. So that's reports. Now, here's the key that if 80%, just to pick a number, if 80% is not investment advice and 20% is investment advice, then the key thing that your compliance person needs to know is that you bill separately for those two things. So we kind of view it as two businesses. You have the investment advice business and you have the not investment advice business, and that's 80% of what you do. So let's just say your fee is $35,000 per year. And by the way, that is the average fee on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, where we track, you know, members of that system and what they charge to clients. It ranges from between $20,000 per client per year up to an average of $50,000 per client per year. I say that because there is one advisor that's charging $100,000 per client per year, and we don't include him in the average because he would throw the average off. But anyway, the average is $35,000 when you don't include that one advisor. So the point I'm making it is, if your fee is $35,000 per client per year, you explain to your and if the percentages work out to be the same as they are for us over on the toolkit, then let's just say, for purposes of conversation, that 20% of your deliverables equals investment advice. That means 20% of your $35,000 fee will be billed through your investment advice entity. So in this case, $7,000 of the $35,000 is billed through your investment advice entity. And then if 80% ends up being the percentage of deliverables that are not investment advice in the opinion of your compliance people, so this means you're going to have to actually give them the deliverables checkpoint so they can review them themselves and make a determination which of the checkpoints are investment advice and which are not. So 80% of the fee will be billed through the outside business activity, in this case, $28,000. So this is often a big relief to the compliance people because they want to know, you know, what is it that they need to be actively overseeing from a compliance standpoint? And typically it's the investment advice. And then just to make the final point that that you are creating a firewall between these two entities, we recommend that you have two separate entities. So either on the regulated side, you work through some other entity like your broker dealer or your RIA, or you set up your own RIA, then basically that $7,000 is billed through the investment advice entity so that there's a firewall between the two. But the point I want to make here is that that even if you create this firewall and you set up a separate entity to build this $28,000 as an outside business activity, just a kind of a final point on this, that's not to say that your compliance department might not also rule that you have to pay some sort of a percentage of that $28,000 to them. You would think as an outside business activity, they don't need to regulate it and they don't need to get a piece of that pie. But that's up to them to decide. So I don't have a horse in that race. Every firm's a little bit different on this. But, you know, they may decide that they only have to actively regulate from a compliance standpoint the 20% of what you do that's investment advice, but they may want a percentage of the whole $35,000. I don't get into that. That's kind of your contract with them. You have to kind of work that out with them. But my point is that the two entities should have a firewall. They should be billed separately. That means setting up, you know, a separate entity for your outside business activity. At our firm, we have set up an LLC for the outside business activity, and the client receives two separate invoices. However, we present the invoice during the client progress meeting with a cover letter that makes it look like one single simple fee. It looks like a simple one statement bill, so that they see what they're paying on the cover sheet, but then stapled to it behind it are two separate statements, one billing the outside business activity and the other a statement for the billing of the investment advice. So we do it correctly, obviously, from a compliance standpoint, but we're trying to make it appear to the client as simple as possible so that they don't get confused. And just parting shot, just since the advisor asking this question is in the U.S., in the U.S., many truly comprehensive financial services advisors actually do eventually end up setting up their own independent registered investment advisory firm entity, and in order to build this investment advice portion. And I would say many advisors end up just completely letting their broker-dealer licensing go because they just don't need it. I mean, imagine the world where you have between 50 and 100 ideal clients paying you $35,000 per year. The question on the table at that point is, do you really need your other old broker-dealer non-ideal client business? What many advisors ultimately realize is, you know, after they've set up their own independent RIA, then they've got two entities, their own RIA and their own outside business activity to build these two fees. And then you kind of scratch your head and say, how much complexity do I want in my life? And I'm just saying, many advisors decide, I don't need all this headache of the old, you know, traditional broker-dealer transaction-type commission business. So they end up letting that go because this business is very simple, very streamlined. You know, if you have 100 clients paying you $35,000 per year, I mean, you're doing pretty good. Well, and it's up to you to decide how to define success. But anyway, I'm just saying many advisors who get to that point where they have 50 to 100 ideal clients like this, you know, they start looking for ways to streamline the other areas of their business and their life. Next question. I've heard you mention that you require advisors on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit to use a cloud-based vault to host confidential client documents so that team members can share files. Which cloud service do you recommend? Yeah, I was kind of curious where you got this. Either you know somebody who's using the toolkit, or you very carefully have gone through the frequently asked questions about those who are trying to learn more information about the toolkit. However you got this information, it's not only true, but we also recommend that advisors in the Advisor Pack Monthly program likewise do the same and set up what you're calling a cloud-based vault to host confidential client documents so that team members can share the files. Okay, so there are five name brand services that we can look at. And I would say any of these name brand services are going to work great for you. So we don't, on the toolkit at least, we don't have a horse in that race. We don't care which service the advisors select and use, but there are some rules around this, and I'll go through this with you so that you have some parameters of what exactly you're looking for in these services before you make a decision on which one to use. So we do tell you, we tell advisors, pick whichever cloud service you prefer, but there's some things that you need to think about. And the purpose of having this service is, think of it as just simply a cloud-based file sharing system where you've got, let's say, a folder for each client, and then within each folder for each client, you've got subfolders for each of the subject matter experts: tax, estate planning, financial planning, money management, and insurance. So you've got a folder for each client, and then when you look inside that folder, there are we recommend six folders. So you have one folder for every subject matter expert and then one miscellaneous folder for just miscellaneous information. So these five name brand services that I can recommend, any one of them, are as follows. Microsoft's service is called OneDrive. Most people have a Dropbox account, but that's not the one we're talking about here. We recommend that you upgrade and get the Dropbox for Business service if you're going to use Dropbox. Don't use the free service. Same goes for Google. So there's Google Docs. Well, we recommend this Google Drive system. It's through the Google Apps product that they have. Think of it as Google for Business. So it's not the free services. It's something called Google Apps, under which, if you have a Google Apps account, which is a business account, then the Google Drive service is their, you know, cloud-based file sharing system where you can share confidential client documents with members of the team. There's a company called Just Box, and there's another service called ShareFile by Citrix. Now, again, any of these are fine. The reason that you go for the business version of any of these services is because there's a variety of reasons, and I'll let you need to consult with your IT person, the person that you've got on your team that consults you on technical issues. But I'll just say, from my perspective, from an advisor perspective, the most compelling thing for me and why we always recommend upgrading to the business version of these products is, in the case of Google, just as an example, if you use the free services, you know, you have to ask yourself, why are these services free? And the reality is, if you're using a free service like Google Docs, the reason they're making that service free is because you're the product. You know, they want to know about you, and they want to know about your buying preferences so they can, as Google, they can deliver up ads to you that their sponsors will pay for. And the way they do that in these free services is, you know, they're robots. Their bots go into your file system and examine what you have there in a benign attempt to just figure out how to send you the most relevant advertising. Okay, so you can buy your way out of that. So with Dropbox and Google Drive, you can get out of that situation where you're the product and they're trying to figure out what your buying habits are. By upgrading to the business version, like in Google, it's called the Google Apps Suite. When you do that, then you're buying yourself out of that situation. You're no longer the product. You're paying for this product from them, and therefore you get, you know, a higher level of privacy and security. In other words, you can secure your client documents so that, you know, the agreement is nobody sees those documents unless you give permission, including Google. So anyway, my point is any of these name brands would work fine. You need to upgrade to the business service if they have a business service. Box and ShareFile are business services, I think, from the get-go. So anyway, let me kind of go through the essential elements of whichever one you pick. Like, here's what you need to have in your mind before you pick one. So why do I say stick with the name brands? It's for two primary reasons: security and ease of use. You know, you take a company like Google or Dropbox. These are huge corporations that are highly profitable. They have ginormous security departments, and they are constantly investing in upgraded, you know, end-to-end encryption and, you know, the highest levels of security that can be purchased. They're going to always have state-of-the-art because they're huge companies with big profits, and they can afford to keep the security protocols current. So the name brands can afford to have higher and better security, in the opinion of my IT consultant. And also, just having reviewed all five of these services, the name brands are much easier to use than the smaller boutique services. So, and we have a lot of advisors that use local, you know, their local servers, their own server drives and things like that. You know, they have lower security and they're more complicated to use. So the reason we say stick with the name brands is they tend to have higher, better security, and they're much easier to use. The key is that you need to have a service, and all five of these do. You need to select a service that allows you to link to individual documents. So basically, you know, picture this. You need to be able to link to a client's tax returns. You need to be able to link to a client's investment statements. And as opposed to just linking to the folder. So the problem, like, let's say you have a server for your business sitting there in your office. Well, with most local servers, you're able to direct people to folders. So, like, maybe to a client folder or something along that line. But you cannot send a notification to a subject matter expert to review an individual document, typically. So you need to select a cloud file sharing service that allows you to create a link to individual documents. Now, this is going to increase productivity of your team somewhere on the order of 35% to 45%. So we don't need to get into it here, but you want to think way ahead when you're selecting these services. And part of the objective and the reason why you have a service like this where you can share documents between your subject matter experts, in part, it's to make it easier for them and quicker for them to access documents and to communicate and collaborate with each other about client issues. And you'll increase productivity if you have a service that allows subject matter experts to link directly to documents and, you know, reach out to other members of the team to ask questions about client situations, and not to require subject matter experts to have to dig and hunt through folders to find whatever document it is they're looking for. So productivity is a critical issue, and that's why you have to select a service that allows you to link to individual documents. The other issue is permission and security. So when I said that the name brands have higher security, I'm talking about overall security. But the admin the sysadmin person that's in that's working with you and your firm and the business owner, and in our case, that's usually the trusted advisor, both of those people have to be able to easily add and remove permissions at the folder and the document level. So what I mean by that is, let's say you have a subject matter expert that quits. You know, they were working for all your clients. Maybe it's a tax subject matter expert, just to pick a hypothetical situation. So from one day to the next, your tax subject matter expert is no longer on your team. You have to be able to go in very easily and remove permission from that individual to be able to access any documents in this cloud-based vault. So you need to be able to remove and add new team members, and not just at the folder level. So not just to say, hey, we remove access from this folder so that the former subject matter expert no longer can access this folder, but even down to the document level. Because if you think ahead, you may have guest privileges. You may have a tax subject matter expert that you only use with a handful of clients because maybe they have a very unique, very niched specialty in the area of tax. So you only want to give them a permission in this system to access certain tax documents, you know, allowing them only to look at the documents that they need to do the work that they are doing. And but for a regular team member, a default team member who is working on behalf of your client, you might want to give that subject matter expert access to all that client's folders, all their taxes, all their investments, all their insurance and estate planning and everything. So that's my point. You need to be able to easily and quickly add and remove permissions at both the folder level and the document level, because you're going to need both. And all these name brands do all of this. So I would say stick with the name brands, and all of this other stuff falls easily into place. And if I had to pick one, and I would say any of those five are great, but if I had to pick one, I'd have to pick Google Drive, because, and it's only because, as I look across all the members in the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, all the advisors worldwide that are doing this, the most common, they've all gone through their own internal process to determine which cloud file sharing vault service they want to acquire. And after they've all gone through their own due diligence, the majority of them have selected Google Drive. So I'm just saying, you can't argue with success. I mean, when you look worldwide and the majority of advisors select one system, you have to figure it's better in some way. And I can tell you that we use that system. Well, we observed it was the most common system used by our advisors. And so somewhere along the line, we started using that service just so we could kind of mildly support it a little bit. And I'm telling you, it's very easy to use. I've reviewed all of them, and I have a little more familiarity now with Google Drive, and I can see why most of these advisors choose Google Drive. It's easier to use, and it's got top-notch security. Anyway, so any of them work. If I had to pick one just to shortcut it for you, I'd say look at Google Drive first, and there you go. Okay, this question from a brand new member of the Advisor Pack monthly program. What makes the truly comprehensive financial services business model different or better from other financial advisors' models? What's the competitive advantage? Well, again, one of the benefits of the Advisor Pack monthly program is I give you a peek at the toolkit from time to time. So we have this issue described on the toolkit. And as a matter of fact, we on the toolkit, we recommend that trusted advisors have a presentation like the one that I'm about to show you with their deliverables team members. So the slide deck I'm about to run through right now is what we recommend that you have as a conversation with each and every one of your subject matter experts. Now, here's how the conversation goes. The comprehensive financial services business model is radically different from what ideal clients say that they have ever experienced. We've got data on this. We've done quite a bit of research over the last 14 years on this issue. And the reason that we present truly comprehensive financial services in the way that we do is because the clients have told us this is something radically different from anything they're able to find anywhere. As a matter of fact, most clients, when they hear us outline truly comprehensive financial services and what it is, the most common reaction is, I didn't think that kind of service was actually available anywhere at any price. So it is radically different. So before we came along, just to explain, kind of put in context for your deliverables team members, before you have to kind of put yourself in the shoes of the ideal client. Before we came along, ideal clients were accustomed to let's call the traditional financial services model. In the traditional model, if there's any coordination or overarching strategy at all, it's usually the ideal client themselves who are initiating it. And according to clients, the team members that they've had experience with in the past typically do not proactively coordinate with each other on any regular or ongoing basis. And this is very frustrating to many ideal clients. You know, they would be easier for them if their team talked to each other and didn't expect that the client themselves be put in the position of coordinating the team. So this is the traditional financial services model. At the top, you have the client. It's the client is the one that's coordinating with the team. If team members ever talk to each other, it's rare and almost never. So that is the issue. There are three critical questions in this traditional model that are kind of in the mind of the client as they're thinking about this model. The relevant questions are, who's actually establishing the overarching strategy? Usually there is none. The client has something in their mind that they're trying to accomplish. It's not documented, so there is no strategy that's presented to the team. So the tax accountant and the estate planning lawyer, the insurance agents, none of them are clear on what the overarching strategy is because nobody has really established it for them. Now, there is a question on the table. Who's the one that's providing oversight to ensure that all the recommendations are well aligned with the overarching strategy? Well, while there is usually not an overarching strategy in place, the client does have something in their mind, even if it's in the subliminal back part of their mind. They do have in their head some things that they're trying to accomplish. So the question is, when all these professionals that are currently in their life, their tax accountant, their insurance agents, their estate planning lawyer, if they have a financial planner, most clients have their money parked somewhere, maybe at the bank, or they've got a financial advisor with some investments, whatnot. The question is, all of these professionals are continually making recommendations to the client. That's what they do. They sit down with the client and they make recommendations. The accountant makes tax recommendations. The lawyer makes estate planning wills and recommendations regarding wills and trusts. The insurance agents are making recommendations regarding the insurance. But the question is, who's providing oversight over these recommendations to make sure they're well aligned with the strategy? And the answer is usually nobody. There is no oversight. So the insurance agent makes a recommendation, nobody's overseeing it. Or if you want to say that, maybe the client's overseeing it. So they're kind of pitching the client on a recommendation, but I'm talking about professional oversight from a skilled person, usually nobody. And then the third, there are many questions about the traditional model, but I think these are the three bottom line questions. The third question is, who's responsible for measuring success against the goals? So if the client has goals, which most do, but they're not typically documented or not always documented, if there's anybody measuring success to make sure that things are moving towards the goals, it's usually the client themselves. So it's a very unsatisfactory model if you're an affluent ideal client. So they've got money, they've got lots of objectives, they're busy, they're successful. They're used to delegating and paying for services, but yet Nobody has ever stepped up to create an overarching strategy. Nobody's making sure that all these recommendations that are constantly coming in from these various professionals, nobody's making sure that these recommendations are well aligned with the overarching strategy, and nobody's measuring success. So every so often, nobody's really sitting down saying, you know, you're on track or you're off track to your specific goals. So this is very, you know, irritating to some ideal clients. I would go so far as to say there are millions of multimillionaires out there who would love to solve this problem and get all of this into a better model, but they just don't think there's an advisor out there willing and able to pull all this together for them and to resolve these three bottom line questions. Matter of fact, the competition out there, you know, as this is from a client perspective, because we've surveyed, we've got data on lots of clients going back over 10 years. In the traditional financial services model, financial advisors often hold themselves out to clients as being a one-man band. Hey, I'll coordinate all your financial affairs and, you know, kind of a one-stop shop. I'll be your place where I kind of coordinate, you know, all your strategies for you. Whether they can or can't is not really the relevant question here. It's mostly, and we have data on this, ideal clients are the ones that look at this model and they're suspicious, where whenever they see that there's no clear team in place, there are not skilled professionals in each of these narrow fields of finance, tax and estate planning and so forth, you know, the clients are suspicious of this one-man band model, yet that's what most of the competition is out there. This is the way the clients view them. So in our truly comprehensive financial services business model, our model is very, very different. You've got the most trusted advisor who's building a team, and we would say orchestrating the team of subject matter experts, so that before there was no oversight, there was no person, you know, coordinating all the strategy, the comprehensive lifetime strategy for the client. Now you have a most trusted advisor coordinating a team. So this model, this truly comprehensive financial services model, is quite different from a client perspective, because now you have, you insert a trusted advisor between the client and the subject matter experts, and now the client has a single simple point of contact to kind of let their heart out on what they're trying to accomplish and share everything that they're trying to do financially. And then they have this trusted advisor who internalizes all this, creates a comprehensive lifetime financial strategy, and turns around and coordinates the team, so that it's not the client coordinating the team now, it's the trusted advisor. So this is quite radically different. And from a client perspective, this is what millions of multimillionaires out there have said, this is what I've been looking for years. But not only can I not find an advisor like this, as I talk to all my friends, all my multimillionaire friends, none of them have an advisor like this anyway. So I would say the way you describe this to the team is that this model, as simple as it seems, is something that clients claim they cannot find anywhere at any price. It is quite different. And, you know, this deliverables team structure, it's basically kind of flipped the whole situation around on its head. Whereas before, the client was coordinating everything, now we have subject matter experts in place who are establishing the overarching strategy for each client, ensuring that all the recommendations are perfectly aligned. So when an insurance agent says, hey, Mr. Client, you need to buy this life insurance, it goes through, now before the client sees it, it goes through your insurance subject matter expert to make sure that that recommendation is perfectly aligned with the overarching strategy. And then finally, you have the subject matter experts are responsible for measuring success. So the client's got goals, and the subject matter experts in our model are making sure that there's progress being made towards the goals. So, you know, the three bottom line questions in the client's mind have been resolved. No longer is the ideal client worried that these things aren't happening, or if they are, it's kind of on their shoulders to do it. Now you've got a team led by a most trusted advisor that's accomplishing all this for you. So the one thing that we haven't talked about here is connected to the trusted advisor is an administrative manager. So in our model, the subject matter experts are coordinated by a skilled administrative manager so that the trusted advisor is free to invest time face-to-face or on the phone serving ideal clients directly and facing clients most of the time, whereas the administrative manager is back-to-back with the advisor facing the team and coordinating with the advisor on a daily basis and then coordinating with the team to make sure the team is, you know, completely on the same page as the client and delivering and making sure that the team is doing everything that they're supposed to be doing. So that is not only our model, but what differentiates our model from the traditional financial services model. What is each deliverables team member's role in the truly comprehensive financial services business model? Okay, so this question came in from that same advisor, the newer advisor to the Advisor Pack Monthly program. Again, I went over to the toolkit and I just grabbed the way we describe this issue on the toolkit so that you kind of see, you know, how we describe on the toolkit how the kind of the role of each deliverables team member. So, as we have established, the administrative manager is the individual designated by the trusted advisor to coordinate the subject matter experts. And that frees the trusted advisor up to not have to do many of the administrative duties, but rather focus on the client. So the trusted advisor is focusing and facing the client. The administrative manager is focusing and facing the subject matter experts. Now, everyone on the team has their unique responsibilities. I would say the 80-20 goes as follows for the trusted advisor. If you're curious what the priorities of a trusted advisor ordinarily should be, is 80% of your time should be invested face-to-face or on the phone serving your ideal clients, or face-to-face or on the phone with potential clients. So in essence, you've got ideal clients who are paying the freight. These are the clients that are paying the majority of the fees to you and your firm, and you know they deserve the lion's share of your time. And then beyond your clients that you've committed to serving, your ideal clients, it's left to you typically to be the only one that goes out and acquires new clients. So this should be 80% of your time. Face-to-face or on the phone serving ideal clients, face-to-face or on the phone going out and getting new clients. So what do you do with the other 20% of the time? Well, that's where you coordinate your team, and that's where you serve your non-ideal clients. So you should, you know, a really successful advisor is quite intentional about this and makes sure that, you know, they budget only 20% of their time to coordinate with staff and to serve non-ideal clients. So then what's the administrative manager's priorities? It's to make sure everything else gets done. Specifically, it's in our model, and we're not going to go into the details of this here. We have modules that you'll be receiving as a monthly project to work on all of these things. But in our model, it's the administrative manager's responsibility to build the team of subject matter experts. Now, stop before you jump to conclusions. We do not have your administrative manager interacting with any subject matter experts. That is the trusted advisor's job in the process to recruit subject matter experts. What I'm saying is the administrative manager is the project leader, manages the timeline for the recruitment of every subject matter expert, proactively notices when there's a vacancy on the team of subject matter experts or when a subject matter expert is underperforming and needs to be replaced. It's the administrative manager in our model that really takes on the responsibility of building the team of subject matter experts and managing the project to acquire subject matter experts onto the team. So the administrative manager manages the project proactively, and the trusted advisor in our model actually is the one that the administrative manager has interacting with subject matter expert candidates so that, you know, the process, so that it's the trusted advisor who interviews and selects, makes the final decision on selecting the best candidates to join the team. But anyway, that's the administrative manager's job. Also, the administrative manager's job to coordinate the subject matter experts, as we have said. So those are the two primary responsibilities of the administrative manager. So what's the role of a subject matter expert? You have the tax, financial planning, money management, estate, and insurance, the five subject matter experts. What are their roles? What are their unique responsibilities? Well, in our model, we only invite subject matter experts onto the team if they already have a robust process in place and they've already got a large number of clients that already meet our ideal client profile. So subject matter experts should already have a very tight, strong process in place for their narrow field of finance. Their responsibility is to be responsive to other members of the team and to collaborate with the other subject matter experts. See, our approach and what makes our approach different from a client perspective is, you know, we not only have a team, which is rare, but our team collaborates with each other over client issues. So in between client meetings, the subject matter experts talk to each other. That's a responsibility of each subject matter expert. And before every meeting, the subject matter experts review the work of the others. So there's an element of peer review and oversight between subject matter experts who review each other's work before the client sees it. And finally, it's the responsibility of subject matter experts to never miss a deadline. The only thing that keeps our system moving forward is the fact that everyone on the team realizes that everybody else is kind of waiting for them. So in a team approach like ours, everybody has to deliver their work on or before the deadline. So these are the unique responsibilities of the three major players in our system. So we recommend that you as a trusted advisor tell each subject matter expert something like this. As trusted advisor, my job is to make sure that every subject matter expert is skilled and wants to be a valuable team player. They want to be on the team and wants to actively contribute to the team. So it's really my job as trusted advisor to make sure that every subject matter expert wants to serve in a team environment. Our administrative manager's job, after I've done my job making sure that every subject matter expert wants to serve on the team, then it's the administrative manager's job to take over and coordinate the team, because each team member appreciates the coordination efforts of the administrative manager. That's part of being a good team player. The subject matter experts really appreciate the fact that there's an administrative manager coordinating things. So my job is to make sure that I have a skilled team of subject matter experts who want to be led, and then my administrative manager's job is to lead them. So it's my job to make sure each subject matter expert wants to be coordinated, and it's the administrative manager's job then to coordinate them. And so we have an arrangement worked out to where if ever there's a subject matter expert that is not being responsive or is pushing back on the administrative manager's authority or is exhibiting behavior that says that they, you know, they don't want to be on the team or they don't want to be led or coordinated by the administrative manager, then it's popped back up to me, where I've got to then sit down with the subject matter expert and have the shape up or ship out conversation, because the only way this works is we have an administrative manager that coordinates the team, and the team has to want to be coordinated. And if we've got a team that's highly skilled and wants to serve on a unique team with highly skilled peers, then it's a radically different business model that clients can't find anywhere else. were the only game in town. This is quite a unique environment, and you may have to go through quite a few subject matter expert candidates before you can find five that are both skilled and want to serve on a team. But as you continue interviewing candidates, you will eventually find subject matter expert candidates who are actually intrigued with the notion of serving on a very high-level team of peers who in complementary professions. From their perspective, if you've done this right as a trusted advisor, and if you've made sure that every subject matter expert is as skilled as they are, but in their own field, then that solves a big issue for each subject matter expert. Now they have resources that they previously didn't have. If they've got a question on tax, they can pick up the phone and talk to the tax expert. If they have a question on, like, a legal question, they can pick up the phone and call the estate planning lawyer. If they have a question on the client's insurance coverages or things that are excluded, they can pick up the phone and call the insurance expert. The point is, there are professionals at very high levels out there that when they hear this business model, they are not only intrigued, but they are quite attracted to this business model. And that's what you want. You want a team of subject matter experts that are very intrigued about this whole notion of working on a team delivering truly comprehensive financial services. Well, that's it for the August session of the Advisor Pack monthly session. As always, we wish you all the best in implementing. And until next month, I'm Mark Little.